let's pick up where we left off, I guess last week. We unpacked the keynote and, for WWDC 2019. And my status was that I had not yet installed most of the betas. I was not doing iOS 13 or watchOS 6 or tvOS 13 at all. I just had macOS Catalina on the iMac. That's since changed. So we'll go through in detail a lot of both of our impressions of the new beta releases in this episode.
You couldn't hold off.
Yeah, no, it's been a journey. and then, but first I want to do a quick update on the iPod Touch story. So, you know, Apple released the seventh generation iPod Touch a few weeks ago, like a few days before WWDC started.
Yeah, week before. Yeah.
And that was just so they could kill off the sixth generation version, which had an older chip in it, and they dropped it from iOS. They didn't get iOS 13 support. And we mentioned in this show, like the big thing that iPod Touch couldn't do was group FaceTime. And then whenever Apple released the new iPod Touch, which doesn't have like a brand new chip in it, was it like the iPhone 7 chip?
I think that's right.
Yeah. So it was that that it could also handle AR apps for the first time, which I hadn't considered, because AR is a bit niche and then the iPod Touch is old but I guess you just couldn't do AR kit on the old iPod Touch. So the new one,
it went from A8 to A10. That's what I meant.
Okay. Yeah. A8 to A10. Not even a huge leap, but a leap enough to add some new features without changing.
Yeah, and A10 is the minimum cutoff for AR kit. So
the HomePod can do. No, that's A8. Or is it? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, HomePod's A8. It's just on the screen.
HomePod can't do AR kit. one of the things on the show that we talked about before was that my daughter had an iPod Touch and that the battery was shot on it, and the cost to replace it was, I think near $100, if not more than that. And it was just not worth it, like putting that money towards an old iPod that had features missing. And when the new one came out, I didn't immediately buy one. Just kind of thought about it for a bit, and she still asked about it. As kind of weighing like iPhone, like an older iPhone versus an iPod, but there's just no need for her to have a, something with a cellular plan and even to use one without one. It's like, I feel like an iPod was just, it's just slimmer and lighter. And for her, it's $200, like versus, you know, maybe similar for an iPhone with features that aren't being used. So it just went with it. And, actually ordered her one and my son one. He's about two now. And, it's a bit soon for him, but I wanted to get her a pink one, because I knew she'd enjoy that. The last one was black. And, my son got it in a blue one, but the idea there is that like the pink one kind of can't be as hand-me-down, so it works out. But the fun thing has been AR, like so we've not done group FaceTime yet. I'm going to show her how that all works eventually, but she has loved downloading AR apps, and like one was like a pet dragon. And just the whole concept of like aiming at the floor, finding open space. In the living room, we do have a big open space where there's like pretty reliable, you know, without having like a dedicated table for it. And she could visualize a dragon through her iPod Touch, and her iPad could do this all along, but I just never bothered showing her because it's big and bulky, you know, and it's not ideal for that. But with the iPod Touch, she was having a blast with that. So that's cool. The idea for my son is that he's got, a music player and a video player without, you know, taking our phones and like calling on 911 or like resetting our passwords to infinity. So, we haven't handed that over yet. It's still kind of ready for him to go, but iPod Touch. So, and she was just super thrilled to have it. She knew exactly what it was. And she screamed at the top of her lungs. She was so happy. So, it's still for somebody, and they've gotten good. Well, so they're going to get some good use out of it.
Like the AR situation at the moment is still kind of in the, you know, it's not essential phase. You just kind of play around with different bits, but it's great for like kids and stuff. And they have like cool little games and little educational apps. And obviously Apple loves to show you that frog one where you can dissect the frog in AR. That's really cool. And like, you know, you can't dissect a frog in real life as a, you know, a lay person. Maybe if you're in like a science lab, then sure. But you know, if you're just at home, you can't do it. And you're never going to, just looking at the slices of the frog in a book and the little pictures, it's not the same as having like the 3D model that you can kind of split apart. Like there are nice uses for AR in those kind of, you know, small niches. And in a way, the touch is like the best Apple device for it at the moment because
price and portability.
Yeah, it's thin and light. Like, the iPad's so big, and the screen's nice on the iPad, but it's your arms hurt holding up for too long. So that kind of, like, you don't want to do it for that long a period. And then your phone, the AR stuff uses a lot of battery. So you kind of, you know, shy away from doing it that much on your phone just because you want to use your battery because it's so essential to, you know, being your phone.
Yeah.
And the touch is, like, the closest you can get, really, to, like, the non-essential device that is still, you know, like, portable and easy to carry around. And
yeah.
Obviously, what everyone's, like, transcending towards gradually is, like, on face, you know, AR goggles, AR glasses. But, of course, until you can get there, you just have to, like, take the viewport of the touch and, you know, hold it up as if you were looking through it. You just use it as, like, the window or the lens. But I just wish the design of the touch was more, you know, slightly more modern. Like, the AR situation would be way more immersive if it didn't have, like, fat bezels at the top and bottom. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm not expecting, like, Face ID or anything crazy. They could have done... If they'd just, like, done a bezel-less screen and even still just carried on using the passcode, because it's not like you'd even be losing Touch ID because it's never had Touch ID either.
Yeah.
Like, you could have just gone, like, full screen, whether it's 4 inches with no bezel or using the same chassis and just filling it with more, you know, more screen real estate. It would have been, you know, much more compelling offer. Whereas at the moment, it's like, you know, your daughter had an old Touch, but that was a different color. But apart from the color change, it's
identical,
you know, physically,
right?
It's barely changed. Like, you know, and most people don't understand the difference. I still think people just look at that and, you know, go, it's kind of old. Like, and it, you know, in a way it is because it does look old. But,
you know, if it was $130, like, that would feel a lot better than if it's $200.
$199 for the base storage. It's just like, if it, I think we said this when it came out, it was like either, you know, do a bit of a design bump and keep the price where it was, or it would be like processor bump and the price goes down to like $149 or something.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If they'd have done that, I'd have been like happy with it. But as it is, it just kind of, you know, skirts the edges of like acceptability. In my opinion.
And they used to.
You know, you just don't ever really have another option.
Yeah, there used to be, you know, when the Apple Touch was updated often, frequently, semi-regularly, it would be that the iPod was like, oh, can't wait for the iPhone to be that thin. Like, it would advance from where the iPhone was just because it had less in it. But then once the iPhone 6 era started, like, that just stopped. And the iPod Touch is like, if like, as a device for something from, like, a competitor, I guess, there's not much in that space anymore, besides, like chintzy tablets that are bigger. It's really nice. Like, it's got an aluminum back. The colors are way better, I think, than, like, the 10R colors, in my opinion. Like, it's got, like, a vibrant blue. It's got, like, a hot pink color. And my daughter calls it gold pink. It's not because it's, like, rose gold, but it's, like, shiny. And she gets that. It's, like, shiny. It's got, like, the chamfered edges that we used to appreciate from, like, the iPhone, you know, 5 era. It's a nice device. It's just, you know, it's just dated now. But the AR stuff, like, for me, there's like no like practical utility that I get out of it. And so it just feels kind of gimmicky and like an exploration space for like something in the future. But like seeing her enjoy it and be like, it's like the dragon's really there, but it's not actually there. Like she was so excited. And I think in about a year, my son will be old enough to kind of follow what she's doing. And then like the two player AR stuff.
Yeah.
Like having both of them have iPod touches that do AR kit, when they can do like multi-level or, you know, like two multiplayer AR stuff and like with each other, see the same thing in the same space. Like that's already ready now, but like, it'll be even more, you know, solid then, in a year's time. So, I'm now kind of paying more attention to that way, you know, like when it comes in to the keynote section, they always do a demo. Now,
And obviously now you have, you know, group FaceTime devices for, you know, both your kids and, you know, normally I'd be ribbing you a bit for buying an iPod Touch that you don't use for a year because your kid's not doing it. But realistically, the Touch isn't going to get refreshed for probably another 4 years anyway.
Yeah,
like, well,
totally.
Probably 1 year early. Maybe you can do something with it in that time and then you can actually pass it along.
Yeah. And he's at the age now where like he's, you know, he gets bored and like if we're at like dinner, it's really tough to go to dinner now. But he used to be, he was like, it was a treat to go to dinner with him because he was so well behaved. And now he's like, he wants to like go back in the kitchen and like explore the restaurant and everything. So it is easier in those situations to like play a movie on our iPhone. And I wish it wasn't the case, but like it just helps out with the situation. And also, I do try to limit screen time, but I do not mind playing music like all the time. And so in the mornings, sometimes it will be a battle to get him dressed for daycare. But I can play a song on my phone and like all of a sudden he's just like anything he's cool with everything. And so to have a device that's his, that's got like his music saved to it all the time is useful. And with family sharing, like I can play, Baby Shark from his iPod and not affect my listening history. Like, I've gotten many kids songs recommended to me on like the For You new music mixes because it's my account playing. Even if we do family sharing, it's my phone, you know? So it solves a few problems in that way. So, iPod Touch, yay, I'm looking forward to it. I will say the market for iPod Touch cases has dwindled, including from Apple.com. There may be more in stores, but I searched on Apple.com and all I get, like, the top results were like AirPods and stuff. And even like Best Buy had like one option, and I ordered like a random case from Amazon that looked pretty good, but it was like really flimsy in person. And now I'm taking a shot with like another one that claims to be waterproof, but it's not a big market, which is weird because the seventh gen has the same shape as the sixth gen, which had the same shape as the fifth gen, except the fifth gen had the little loop, you know, for the camera. And so like all the cases that you can still find are like, they work with the fifth and sixth gen and they don't know about the seventh yet, but it's the same, but it's a very small market from what I can tell. So if anyone has recommendations, I've got something coming, but it might fail too. So let me know.
I guess that just kind of reflects the dwindling popularity of the iPod market. It's like when you buy, you know, non top tier Android phones from, you know, different manufacturers, the case and accessory like infrastructure just isn't there to support it.
Right. Yeah.
It's too low volume.
Yeah. The Apple iTouch. So when I had an Android phone, I think this is kind of a popular thing to do. When I had an Android phone, I also, it was back when the iPhone was only on AT&T, like before it even came to Verizon. And I had a carrier called Cellular South, which is now called C-Spire, but it was like a regional carrier in the southern states. And I had an Android phone. They didn't have iPhone at the time. They do now, like everyone does. But I also had, with my MacBook Pro 13-inch that I got in 2009 for starting college, it came with a free iPod Touch back when the back-to-school thing was like not free Beats, but like a free iPod Touch. And that was really cool because it was like I had an iOS device that was basically like an iPhone because I was on like college Wi-Fi all the time. That was really cool. Like it was served me a purpose then. I think like that was pretty popular. Like people that had Android phones had iPod Touches for like the iOS experience, like for, you know, just the different quality of apps and games and everything. Like, but back then apps came to iPhone first and then they came to Android later. You know, that's not as common anymore, but that was definitely a thing then. So yeah, I mean, like the iPod Touch era was way different back then than it is now. But it's definitely still a purpose for it, you know, today. And I'm glad it's updated.
Yeah. And iOS 13 cements the 4-inch screen. So you're still going to get, you know, people respecting that, whether it's for the iPod Touch, whether it's for the iPhone SE, or whether it's even for like the 6S and the 7 model, 7 Plus with like the,
scaled effect.
Display zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the display zoom options, because, you know, that went away with the 10 series, but the younger phones still offer it. So the 4-inch screen still might not be as looked after as, you know, the flagship sizes now, but they can't ignore it, you know, wholesale.
Yep. So that's a cool thing. Last thing I'll say on that is that when I was buying them, the 6th generation iPod Touches were still being sold by Best Buy for the full price. And you had to know to look for the 7th gen to know what you were getting. Cause like in stores, there was no stock. You had to go to an Apple store, like to buy one in person. Like no store within 300 miles of me had the new models in stock, but they had all of the old models in stock for the full price. And so like, if you were just buying one in stores, which is not common, you could potentially buy one with missing features and no support for the next software update. So beware.
This month, Happy Hour has teamed up with Whip Labs for 9to5 Mac's Deal of the Month to offer 15% off the Slope stand for iPhone and iPad. This is a beautiful desk stand for your devices. Slope is the ultimate universal iPhone and iPad stand, featuring a patented design made from the same brushed and anodized finish as an iMac or MacBook. It's even featured in the Museum of Modern Art design stores. It looks a lot like the base for Apple's iMacs, so now your iPhone and iPad can sit on your desk right alongside your Macs and fit in perfectly. If you're interested in using Sidecar from macOS Catalina, well, you really need something to hold the iPad in place whilst your hands are on the Mac keyboard and mouse, the Slope stand is a brilliant fit for that use case. Just use the Slope stand to prop up an iPad to use as a secondary display whilst you operate the Mac. Slope uses a unique suction technology made of nanofoam with thousands of microscopic air pockets that allows the stand to hold your device snugly in place at a perfect viewing angle without any sticky adhesive or clips. If it looks familiar, you might have actually seen this stand before on 95 Mac if you watch our video content. Our video editor, Jeff Benjamin, liked the slope stand so much he started using it in all of his videos to display the iPhone or iPad on 95 Mac's YouTube channel. If you want to take advantage of 95 Mac's special deal or get more information about the stand, just go to whiplabs.com. That's WIPLABS.com. The link is in the show notes. To get 15% off your slope purchase, use promo code 95Mac2019.
All right, let's talk about CarPlay in iOS 13 because, like I said, I have since installed since last week the iOS 13 beta on my iPad. I think I had it on the iPad last week, and 1Password wouldn't open, and I just said, I'll just switch to iCloud Keychain if it doesn't work on the iPhone. Luckily, it does work on the iPhone. It just won't open on the iPad, so I guess that's the difference in their apps. But I've got iOS 13 on my iPhone XS, watchOS 6 on my Apple Watch Series 4, and tvOS 13 on my Apple TV 4K. So I'm all in on the betas. CarPlay is, I published a story today, which is just our initial like hands-on with screenshots and everything of CarPlay. But that's been like one of the most fun things to test because I've covered CarPlay since like day one of consumers being able to have their hands on it when Pioneer released an aftermarket display that worked with CarPlay before like even Hyundai had CarPlay in their new cars. They were the first like car maker too. And it's gradually gotten better from day one. But this is like the biggest update to CarPlay since day one. And have you used CarPlay at all on iOS 13 yet?
Yeah, I gave it a quick. I don't actually own a car, but
your family car.
I plugged it into my parents' car quickly just to give it a run through. Obviously, we've talked about it a lot and watched the coverage, and I've watched some online videos and stuff. Because you really have to watch videos of the new CarPlay stuff because it's very major changes. It's not like a small year for CarPlay by any means.
Yeah, it is a situation where the betas are very buggy and things either work very well or not at all. And I think with me, I'm not used to filming, and then filming CarPlay is even trickier. I think Jeff Benjamin, our video editor, has done some CarPlay videos and he's found it challenging to get good lighting and everything. But the situation in beta one, at least, is that it's either really good or you need to restart your phone. The up down volume button, power button gesture to reboot. Or Siri just won't be available even though you're on the network and is working fine on your phone. So one of the first things we touched on the descriptions of what's going on with CarPlay and iOS 13 last week. But just in using it, I've got a much better sense of what's going on now. And one of the first things that I just didn't think about last week and noticed from the videos was that, the home button's gone. It's still the same function in the same location, in the bottom corner of whatever side your status bar is on based on where you drive in your country. But for the longest time, since CarPlay began, there was a virtual home button that looked like the iPod Touch home button, before Touch ID, where it shows the round rick for the icon, grid for an icon shape. And you would touch it to go to the home screen. You'd hold it down for Siri. But the home button went away with the iPhone X, so it was the only place that the home button existed in that era. And now it's either a 4x2 icon grid, at least for my car, or it's a rectangle and then smaller squares or rectangles. That's the dashboard icon, and it changes based on where you are. So if you're in an app, or I guess whatever the last view you had was, it can change between either one of those. And it's all the same function, where you touch it, you go there, or when you hold it, you activate Siri, but it's no longer a virtual home button. And the other thing, it basically
gives you a glyph representation of the current home screen. Because one of the big changes in CarPlay iOS 13 is it's more like iOS now, where you have the screen of apps, then you have the widget view. But obviously the widget view on CarPlay is a bit different. It's not just single column. It's actually richer.
Yeah.
Kind of sad in a way, but it's true.
Yeah. Then the other thing that is on the Apple.com website for all the features of iOS 13, they highlight this, but I didn't notice until running it, is that the corners are now rounded. So even though I think every screen is a version of squared off corners, even if it's misshapen, they now do rounded corners to match the iPhone X, XS, XR, XS Max design, and the iPad design for that matter. So it's it's fake because you actually have the full screen, but they black out the corners, and so it looks like it's a rounded design. That's I think that's cool and like modern. It's like the new iPhones and iPads are. But I will say this, in my 2017 Honda Civic, from the driver's seat, the built-in screen is not very nice. It's like 800 by 480 or something, like not a great resolution. And it's certainly not like a nice screen. So there's like the bit of that air gap that you've had from like pre-iPhone 4 iPhones, where it's like an ATM machine. It's a capacitive screen, not resistive touch, where you got to like press with your fingertip or fingernail. But there is like from the angle, the bottom right corner, from the air gap, it cuts off the rounded corner part. So that you can tell it's not like, if you look at it full on, it looks fine. But at that angle, it looks actually kind of rough. And so I think they're like, it breaks the trick that they're doing there.
I think it's kind of silly for them to put rounded rectangles on, you know, what are pretty universally square displays. Like,
it's not
stupid on the iPhone. It would look stupid on the Mac if you take a non-rounded corner screen and just like put fake diagonals on there. Like it'd just be a bit silly.
It isn't true to form, right? Like,
no. And obviously it's not, then, you know, none of these displays are gonna be OLED displays, so it's gonna be like ugly black as well, not like true black, so it even like blends in like fake bezel either.
Yeah. I think it's like modern, and it's nice that they're like doing all these changes to CarPlay this year, but that's one thing where just from like my driver's seat position looking at the screen, it's like a little bit cut off right there. This is weird.
Yeah, and I don't think it's necessary to curve the very, very corners when they can still get the aesthetic of, you know,
rounded apps,
the iPhone cousin on the apps and on all the widgets and on like the dashboard layer, all of that's, you know, got rounded corners.
Yeah.
So you'd still get the feeling that you're actually in the rounded corner experience.
That's true.
When you go full screen, the very, very edges don't need to be clipped like that. It just seems a bit pointless.
Yeah. It looks fine in screenshots, but again, it's like in practice, and this just varies on like your screen quality and like where you're positioned, but no one's like directly in front of the screen. And so unless your screen is a better quality than mine is, which is probably, I mean, I think a lot of these screens are like very, like the standard, you know, that you might pay extra to have a screen in your car at all when you buy a new car, but they're not going to be very nice. And like, you know, it's tough. And they're showing like a lot of the screenshots as like widescreens because all the new stuff looks best on widescreens. And widescreens have existed before, and CarPlay has been supported on widescreens before, but now they're doing more stuff with like, you can support CarPlay on like screens with like bezels over the screen. So they now have like safe areas. And they can like shrink the CarPlay screen within the display. So like that kind of makes me think of like Tesla, which does not support CarPlay, but they're supporting like shrinking the CarPlay UI based on like changes to around the CarPlay screen. And I've seen before like CarPlay on top of like something else, but I guess it's like an individual case by case basis. But
now on 13, they're kind of trying to support a regular shape, so you could have like an oval screen and still have CarPlay fit inside it, and be like cut off at the edges and stuff, and like shrink in or adjust the insets appropriately. Because some cars do design like that, like especially the higher end cars, they have like, even if the actual screen behind is, you know, a normal rectangle, they cover it with like parts of the dash, and
for like,
you know,
stylistic reasons,
stylistically trying to like fake it essentially to make it like fit in. And obviously in those times, in pre-13 CarPlay could only render as rectangles, so you'd either have like something that was really, really cropped in or stuff that was your content that was cut off, whereas now they're trying to let you have like a regular inset on, you know, all four sides, so it can, you know, maximize the space really and not be like cut off.
And the new dashboard feature, it's kind of funny that like dashboard that on macOS now, the widget screen, but then dashboard is the name of the feature on CarPlay for the new widget screen. But it's really, really useful. Like, you know, kind of before, like the if you're driving, you can either, you know, if you're navigating, view your map, or if you're not, like you're driving somewhere familiar without traffic concerns, then like I guess you've like your now playing screen, or you have the home screen, but this has like no information except for like a badge on the phone or messages icon. But now you can use dashboard, which is like home screen zero. Home screen one is now like the middle option, and it's got half of the screen is meant for, you know, your current location on Apple Maps, and if you're in navigating, you can have like an overview of your route or like the view of like you navigating. And it can be pretty detailed, like speed limits and like, you know, where turns are, and it can change. And then the whole right side is dynamic, where it's got now playing controls for whatever audio you're playing, whether it's music, a podcast, audiobook, third-party apps. And then there's like room for at least two more tiles where it can be your next calendar appointment with or without an address, recommendations
for Siri shortcuts.
Yeah, anything in the Siri shortcuts. And that's, you can turn that off, but it's like when you're at home, you're to open your garage, which like there's no home app on CarPlay, but then that brings that function to CarPlay, which is really useful. I've also seen like, you know, recommendations for like how to get home from where you are, which is like one of the most common. If you're like dealing with traffic, you want like the best route and you know, like there could be like an accident that you want to get around, just tapping your home address, like the home icon, any of your favorites, whether it's like where you go to work, where you go to school, where you go often, you can just tap there and then navigate quickly without relying on Apple Maps to guess where you want to go. And I'll often see like my family calendar will have an appointment on the calendar with an address, but it's not for me. And the Maps app will show that instead of like navigate home. So now I've got a definitive, reliable home, you know, navigation button. So that's useful. So, I don't know. I had someone ask me if third party Maps apps can use that space. And I think probably the answer is no. I don't know what the.
Yeah, I don't see why they shouldn't be able to.
Yeah, they might have to update with iOS 13. It's like a thing. But
because the way the maps, the third party navigation app UI works on CarPlay from a developer's perspective is quite abstracted, so that they can render the base layer, and then they tell the system, I want these templates, the controls to go over the top. So if you're just going to the preview, they could just the system could just ask the app to render a preview that's, you know, the size of that widget essentially, and then just not ignore all the templates and only show the thing. So at least on a technical perspective, it should be pretty simple for them to do it. You'll probably find, though, that it might require like compilation against iOS 13 for it to actually slot in there, just in case the apps want to do anything special about like laying out for that portrait aspect ratio rather than just the standard landscape shape. But I think it should. I'd be very shocked if it wasn't supported.
Yeah, I've got someone in mind who I could ask too that makes a map app that isn't Google Maps or Waze, and they like pitch me about their maps app and how it works with CarPlay, but it's just never like a time for a story on it because it's not one of the big ones. But I bet they might know, so I'll have to ask them and see and update.
Because the thing is, I'm thinking is what would it show there if you were using a third-party navigation app?
Well, if you're not using Apple Maps at all, like it'll just show where you are right now or a recommendation, you know, for like your next trip. So it would be a shame if it was like you were using Waze or Google Maps and that whole section wasn't useful for you. And they've also added the ability, at least when iOS 13 comes out, to use Siri to control Waze, and we assume other Maps apps, but they didn't say so. Which is the first time on CarPlay that you can actually use anything, you know, something besides Apple Maps with Siri, which was like the big limitation. It's like, you know, it's really easy to get directions with Siri with Apple Maps, but if you want to use Waze or Google Maps, you can't. Well, now you can with Waze when the app updates for 13, and probably with Google Maps, we assume, and like other apps. So, but maybe it would just be like your current location. That's it. But that'd be too bad. So we'll have to find out about that. But generally, like the dashboard feature is really cool because you've got one screen, you know, it's well named for your navigation, your play controls, your dynamic space for like recommendations, and like that space will change from like a calendar appointment to like lane guidance, and then back, you know, to the calendar appointment or something else whenever you're done with that turn. So it's really, really nicely done. I didn't pick up on this, but, it's on Apple's website at least that they've changed kind of the natural the language that Siri uses when just giving you directions to, instead of saying like turn in 1,000 feet, it will say like turn in a specific lane. And so I haven't like had that experience, but apparently Siri navigation will be better with iOS 13.
And they're trying to make it more humane. Like, so instead of always just saying the distance before the next turn, like 1,000 feet or whatever, it can say turn left at the next traffic light, for instance.
Yeah,
like, just to give you more like direct place markers,
more relatable.
Turn left
right.
in a minute, or you know, Yeah, without obviously sacrificing accuracy, but trying to make it less mechanical. Because you always, I think that's one of the things with like GPS navigation. It always makes people frustrated is that they're so predictable in their words. Like there's no it's emulating a human voice, but it's always speaking the same 10 phrases with substituted for
like a passenger giving you directions would never say turn in 1,000 feet.
Yeah, they just say like turn left up here and stuff. And obviously, when you're talking to a car, it can't be that, you know, rough and ready, because it, you know, you still need, otherwise it get in the way, and you know, if you actually need the direction, you need to know it. But if you're thinking of a human, like turn left in 1,000 feet, like I don't know what 1,000 feet is.
Yeah,
like it's just a completely arbitrary number, it's just a big distance. Whereas if you say turn left at the next traffic light, you can lock onto traffic light in your head and you don't even have to look back at the screen again to know that you're approaching the traffic light.
So yeah
that is a really good advancement.
Yeah, navigation shouldn't educate you on what 1,000 feet in terms of driving is, like, because that's, I've used that, I'm like, oh, that's what 1,000 feet is like. It's like this from the stop sign. Okay. And like the best case scenario, like I love this when I'm driving and like a passenger will say like turn where that truck just turned. Like that's like the clearest example. And obviously the car can't do that yet, but this is the next best thing to get more natural about that. And they've also got something that they call junction view in maps in 13, which carries over to maps in CarPlay. Which is just being more detailed about lane guidance, and including elevated, like on ramps and things like that. And there's an area in New Orleans where when I'm coming back from New Orleans, if I listen to the map, I'll get lost and I just have to like look at street signs and do it the old fashioned way. And it's because there's like layers of road and you can go the wrong way and the map thinks that you're going the correct way for a while. And then when it's too late, you can't do anything about it. And so it sounds like Junction View will try to be better about getting you prepared for like the correct turn, especially when there's like an elevation involved.
I think it's going to give you a visualized map rendition now of the actual junction. Like it may be even side by side to the current navigation, because that's how like the non-CarPlay car interface has its own maps in the family car. And that, when you come up to junctions, it will like do a split screen and give you like a better view just at the junction. Whereas on current like iOS 12 and earlier, Apple Maps navigation, it just shows you the lane guidance and the junctions with those like arrows in the black box, really. So it's not as clear as like an actual almost 3D rendition of, you know, go up here, turn here, especially with the elevation. Like it can show you, you know, render the two levels versus, you know, like a 2D icon on the little like map overlay black thing.
Something I've noticed in the beta, but I'm not sure if it's like a beta change or intentional, if it will change in beta 2, I don't know. But alerts now come up from the bottom and, you know, you can tap them. Like if it's a new message, it'll read it out to you. If you get like multiple messages, they'll like fly up on screen to like replace the next one. And in most cases, it helps from obstructing views and, you know, navigation buttons especially. But there are times where that can obstruct something that wouldn't have been obstructed before, like seeing your ETA on the bottom of the map that gets covered now from that bottom notification location. Something someone mentioned on Twitter is that, like, if you get, like, a birthday alert, those will stick until you dismiss them. which I've not experienced, but then that helps with that. Also, if someone just messages, like I'll receive messages sometimes where I can tell the person sending it from a Mac because it's like two words, it's like sporadic. And I'm like, I'm driving. I can't even like tap all these alerts right now. and so in that case, it obstructs it because it's like, you know, the banner stays there for each one for, you know, it replaces the other one. So moving it down to the bottom, that might be intentional. It might be useful, but it's, that's something I'll look for in beta 2 to see if that's still there or not. Because I couldn't find it like on Apple's website or in the keynote, any examples of like an alert coming in to see like what was it like on stage. So I don't know, but we'll see.
I think covering the ETA on the map guidance is clearly a bug. Like they can't want it to be like that. So maybe in some like context now it's going to come from the bottom, and other times it can come from the top, and it's just bugged. So it's currently not. It's only coming from one direction. That'd be my guess. Like it seems insane to me that they're going to move the notification banners to cover, you know, like vital information like estimated time of arrival for you. It's mental.
Yeah, bottom notifications would be useful on like big phones though. So that's something they should consider. The calendar app. So there's a new calendar app, on CarPlay, and it shows you the current date on the home screen. I think by default, it moves it to home screen number two. I've put it on home screen number one in place of like the built-in app that takes you to like, the car interface. So now I've got something to take off that's useful there. And so you see the current date. Month and date. When you open it, you see a list view, which is really nice, of your current events today and upcoming events tomorrow. If they have addresses, you can tap into it, and it's a bit buggy now, but what it's supposed to do is you can tap the address and then it opens Apple Maps, and then you can navigate easily from there. And in the past, you know, like I mentioned before, maps would surface addresses from calendar events. But if you've got like multiple events, or if it's like there's one before that isn't relevant to you, now you've got more control over which one it is. And if your event has a phone number attached, you can tap that and then call in to like a meeting, for example, from CarPlay, from the calendar app easily. So that's nice. The new settings app is interesting. It's got the ability to turn on do not disturb while driving with CarPlay, which was introduced as like a, if you don't have CarPlay, now you can do D&D while driving, activate it automatically, activate it manually, or like automatically. It's like if it detects that you're driving, and then you can say, I'm the passenger, I'm not driving, or by car Bluetooth. Well, now, and you can do that still with CarPlay, but it wasn't just that you're using CarPlay that activates it. Now it can be. And when you turn it off while you're driving, like if you're the passenger, it'll recommend that you use Siri. And we found a lot of examples now where Siri is being heavily promoted throughout iOS 13. Like they want people to know that Siri exists and that you can use it in lots of different ways. And we even saw that whenever
really growth hacking Siri usage at the moment.
Yeah, we even saw that when you message someone from Siri from CarPlay or you know, from the iPhone without CarPlay, the recipient on iOS 13 will see a sent via Siri tag on that message. So at least from the iPhone, including CarPlay, you get that, which is useful because it adds context. Like, it's not like necessarily I'm driving, but it is like I'm using voice. So the message dictation might not be great. And I'm obviously like not in a situation where I can chat back and forth as fast as if it were a keyboard. You know, or it's just useful. Like, you know, that was sent with Siri and then it's educational and you can tap that little section and see, and it explains what Siri does. It was kind of interesting. There's a new light mode, which is new to look at least. I don't love it. I don't love it, but in some like really low quality CarPlay screens, glare is a big issue, especially on a dark background in the daylight. And so, light mode helps with that because, you know, it's a little bit clearer to see in bright environments, especially on those bad screens. You could, what it is you have an option for automatic or dark mode all the time, which is like the old default. It's kind of funny though, like iOS 13 gets dark mode and then CarPlay gets light mode for the first time. It looks,
You can't pick light mode all the time.
Yeah, you can't do light mode all the time unless like you drive at night without your headlights on, because it's based on your headlights, I believe. And so I tried it, and I keep my headlights on automatic so that they turn on if there's not enough light, and they turn off if there is enough light. And so the experience was like going through a car wash, light mode turns off, dark mode comes on because it's like less light in there, or like going under a bridge. But you can't say like I only ever want to use light mode even at night, and that's probably because it's like more, you know, it's just more distracting at night, especially. But if it's tied to your headlights, then maybe you'd be annoyed by it too, unless you just have like your headlights off and you turn them on manually. So, but it's a new look though. And then there, in settings, there's also the Siri suggestions toggle, so you can turn off those from that dashboard view. So it's just navigation and playback controls. So if you don't want to have information surface up for some reason, like you don't want your passenger to see it, then you could turn it off if you wanted to. A few more things I want to mention before we move on. The Siri look you mentioned to me last week, that Siri's got a new look, is less obtrusive. It's not radical, is it? Like, it's just that there's like a translucent background and like the little Siri wave at the bottom, and you can still see some of your content, but it's also like kind of, you know, it's not blurred, it's just dimmed. I think it used to say, what can I help you with today or something like that, and that's been removed.
It'd be like fully dimmed over the whole screen.
Yeah. And it's still a full screen experience, like when you're using, like, for example, the Messages app, but and that's been kind of redesigned, and it's got like clear controls and like a status bar for like when a message is playing, like it's a circle and it goes around the circle to complete. You can easily change your messages, and you could do all this stuff before, but it's just like it looks better now and it's much clearer. So I like that. Like one thing that's different too, in 13 with CarPlay is that before, since I guess iOS 7. When CarPlay came out, was when you tapped the Messages app from the home screen, it would always it would say, do you want to hear unread messages if you have any, or do you want to message somebody? And for the phone, it would say, who do you want to call? So it was always just pushing voice control, and you could just cancel through that, and then you could like tap through the app and see messages, like a list of who sent you messages, if there's any unread, or in the phone app, like, you know, the dial or the contacts, voicemail. And now, it doesn't do that. You just go straight through and you're in the app and you can use Siri, you know, obviously, but it doesn't like force Siri on you at first when there's a navigationable app behind that. And you know, the shortcuts in the sidebar, the status bar for apps, that would always let you skip Siri and just go to the app. And so they've matched that behavior. I think it's a good choice. And then the big thing that we both like is this new Maps ETA feature, where
this is good.
Yeah, when you're driving, you tap through the little kind of HUD on the map, you know, and you can say share ETA. And I think the way it works is it's a little bit limiting, but it surfaces recommendations of contacts, like maybe like 4 or 5. And I don't think you can like look to your whole contacts and like find someone that's not there. It's just based on like who messaged you recently.
On the phone, you can pick anybody.
Yeah, maybe they'll add it in a future beta version. But it's got just like pictures and contact names, and you tap it, and it automatically sends them, I guess, where you're going and how long it will take to get there. And then if your ETA changes, you know, it'll send another message to them. Now the thing for me is like the people I message the most, because I work remotely, don't live near me, so I'm not often messaging them. But I guess like if I messaged my mom like to go visit, I'd say like I'm the way, and then I could like do the ETA thing, and then because I just sent her a message, it would also be there. But I'm hoping they add like a any contact thing. But what do you like about this feature?
Yeah. So the UI on the phone is a bit different to the CarPlay experience. So on the phone, you can, when you're sharing your ETA on a route, you can actually, it shows your like 5 favorites, but then it does have like a plus button where you can just pick anybody. So mm-hmm. I think that it's probably not on the car because they don't want you like scrolling through a big long list maybe, or they're going to add it in the future. But definitely on the phone, you can choose whoever you want, not just the suggested favorites. And also you can set it up so that automatically you can always share a journey ETA with someone. So if you do live at home with like a spouse or something and you always commute home from work, you can in your favorite places in the Maps app add a person to always be notified of the ETA. So every single time you go home from work, if it realizes you're going from work to home, it will notify the people that you're on your way. It will tell them the estimated time of arrival, and it will give little updates. If the ETA gets longer, like if you get delayed or you hit traffic, it will change the day, it will change the time, and then obviously the other side can tap through. They can go to the Maps app. They can see your destination. They can see the time arrival updating as it goes along. It even works if you invite people that are not on iOS 13 or don't even own an iPhone. Mm-hmm. It will instead send text messages. So it will send one message when the journey starts, saying you know, Zach's leaving, and it will be here at 7:00. And then if the 7:00 time changes significantly, it will then send another text message. Oh, the time's now. He's been pushed back to 9 p.m. or 9 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you are inviting iOS 13 device owners, it's a bit more fluid because it integrates directly into Maps and it doesn't have to like send you those text messages. But it does give you that, you know, cross-platform and older iOS version like backwards compatibility, which is really nice to see.
Yeah, because you could probably pull this off before with shortcuts, but you had to build it yourself, and now it's, you know, built into the app. And also I could see it being part of like Find Friends or Find My the new name for the app, but it's not, which makes it way more compatible. You don't have to be on the same iOS version, you don't have to even use iOS, so it's a cool feature. And then
yeah, and it's not super original idea. There's like a mini app store like economy around this kind of app. There's like one called Glimpse, I think, that does the same kind of thing. But obviously, it's nicer to be integrated into the same app that you're actually getting navigation directions from. And if it, especially with like the favorite places doing it automatically, you can see a lot of like obvious use cases. This will definitely come in handy.
Yeah, and it's not tracking on the map where you are, right? Like the other person doesn't see where you are right now. It's just the information, just the ETA time, right?
Yeah, that's what I could get it to work as. When you press share, it says you will now be sharing your location, your route ETA, and your destination with this other person. And so that like label kind of implies maybe that they are going to show your actual location, but I couldn't get it to work in the current
beta. Yeah, it's the first beta, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And then finally the thing that is just super awesome about this release is the independent app view feature that I think we mentioned last week that the passenger of your car can use your phone and it doesn't change what you see on the screen. I'm like, I've literally been in a situation where I'm navigating somewhere I'm not familiar with and the passenger has a phone and they're charging their phone. So they're not using my phone, but we're using navigation on the screen and like they just forget out of habit of like holding their phone and like close the app to like launch another app. And now you can do that. It doesn't change your view. And I totally gotten just used to like, that's how it works myself. And it just made sense to me. Like that's how it works. It's mirroring what your phone's doing. But it's really cool that they've changed. I would not have guessed that they would have done this with CarPlay, but they did. So, which has got to be based on feedback. So, anyway, like the whole update seems really nice. There are some things that like, that could happen if car manufacturers adopt them, like the ability to invoke Siri with the key phrase "Hey" and then Siri, without using the iPhone microphone, with using the car's microphone. But the list of things that requires, like let's see, it's always on microphone input stream process within the vehicle. So however you do that, continuous echo cancellation and noise reduction, voice activity detector, keyword detector, and audio mixer for Siri audio, media playback, and navigation prompts. Like, I don't know if that's common. Like, isn't always on mic in a car?
They almost want a car manufacturer to fit a HomePod in the car.
Right, yeah. Like, the things that you can do with AirPods and PowerBeats, like, you know, yeah. The car maker has to have a lot of tech in there. And I think there are cars that have, like, their own... maybe Volkswagen does this where they've got like their own, you know, voice detection stuff, but, they've got to work with CarPlay at that point, and then they've got to update for iOS 13. But I'm not sure that we'll see that. And we've seen features like this before, like iOS 10, all those years ago, had the ability to show navigation cards on, like the instrument cluster, like where your speedometer is, if you've got a screen there, like my car has that screen where it can be anything. But it doesn't support that feature. And now they've got way more support there where it can be like another app. Like it can be a lot of things and you can like take over that and you can have like a second and third display on the instrument cluster, with safe areas and all this stuff. But like, I don't know if cars will take advantage of that because I couldn't find, I even like asked Twitter, like, has anyone ever seen a car that puts the instrument cluster, you know, you get like your navigation, from Apple Maps, like your turn by turn stuff. And I've never seen it before. Maybe now that it's more capable, that it can be like a second and third app or like, you know, whatever, that will happen, but I don't know. So we'll see. But all in all, the stuff that you can actually use just from like plugging your iPhone into any car with CarPlay is really good. So I'm excited about it.
Two big thumbs up. The CarPlay experience is way better now.
Yeah, totally.
PDF Pen 11 is the ultimate tool for editing PDFs on the Mac, and it's available right now. If you're looking to go beyond preview on the Mac, then PDF Pen is for you. You can go paperless with scanning and optical character recognition, mark up PDFs, redact sensitive info, add headers and footers, watermark your documents, and so much more. You can even correct text in PDFs, add additional pages, and move around images without even owning the original document. PDF Pen has been a staple of the Mac platform for years, and now they're out with a brand new version, version 11. PDF Pen 11 includes several new features, like a split view for comparing pages and documents side by side. There's a new font bar to simplify text editing. It puts text formatting options right in the main UI of the app. You can change fonts in a PDF in one click. It's really impressive. Version 11 also includes support for the continuity camera feature to make it really easy to import documents. This was introduced with macOS Mojave, but not many apps have used it so far. For PDF Pen, you can click Import from iPhone. The document scanner interface appears on your iPhone automatically, instantly. You can snap an image of the paper on your desk and boom, it's scanned onto your Mac, ready to annotate and edit in PDF Pen. PDF Pen Pro is the more advanced version of PDF Pen. It adds the ability to create forms, edit table contents. You can even export to Microsoft Excel if you want to be all business-like. With PDF Pen Pro 11, you can now edit multiple form fields at the same time. There's a whole lot more too. Go beyond preview and learn more about PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro at smilesoftware.com/podcast. That's smilesoftware.com/podcast. Thanks to PDF Pen for sponsoring Happy Hour.
All right, Mayo, I am genuinely confused about this. What is the situation with 3D Touch in iOS 13?
Right. This is complicated, but essentially, obviously, before iOS 13, you had 3D Touch features on like iPhone 10, iPhone XS, all the way back to the 6S. And then on phones like the iPhone XR, you had Haptic Touch, which did not do all of 3D Touch's features, but it simulated most of them using an alternate gesture, whereas rather than just applying direct force, you'd long press and then it would respond with a haptic feedback, which you could then let go and then it would do the same action.
So 3D Touch is a pressure-sensitive display that can detect how far you're pushing into the screen, and then Haptic
and
Touch...
And multiple levels of pressure.
Yeah, and Haptic Touch doesn't have that layer, but it does have a Taptic Engine, which is part of 3D Touch. So they replaced the pressure-sensitive stuff with like a long press, but then that didn't work everywhere.
Yeah, so for a good example is the lock screen controls, where so like the camera, the torch on the lock screen, you can press really hard on a 3D Touch compatible iPhone, and the torch will turn on immediately because it doesn't have to wait for any delays. You can just notice that the force is increased and it turns it on. Whereas on the iPhone XR, it doesn't matter how hard you push on that button, you're still waiting the 1 second or whatever for the haptic touch gesture to complete, mm-hmm. at which point you get the like the vibration, and then when you let go, the light turns on.
Yeah.
And there, not all of the the iPhone XR didn't get stuff like peak and pop, for instance, because you can't really do that on a pressure-sensitive-less screen. Like because for peak and pop, you need the first level of pressure, which is the preview, then the second level of pressure, which is the pop, and all that happens without you taking your finger off the screen. And that's just something you can't really do with a non-pressure-sensitive display, because you can long press for as long as you want, and you know when does the system know when you actually want to commit to the the preview?
Right.
What's happened in iOS 13?
Beta 1.
It's kind of like they've mixed the two together and normalized everything to be as capable as everything else, which means in a way the 3D touch devices have suffered. So now you can get stuff like home screen quick actions on the iPhone XR. You can get home screen quick actions on the iPads. There's a new they've completely deprecated peak and pop. That's deprecated in the APIs all the way down the stack. They've replaced it all with this new kind of like context menu previewing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where you like press and you press down, you wait, it shows you a preview card and it shows some actions below that you can tap on. Now that is available on all devices, so thumbs up if you're on non 3D touch devices.
Does that even work iPads. Even works on like if the SE on,
yeah it works on everything.
That's cool.
Literally everything it works on now.
New iPod touches,
but the assume the Apple touches as well.
Yeah.
That experience is also replicated currently, at least, on all the 3D Touch phones. So the advantages of 3D Touch are essentially nerfed into the ground. Like, to get the context menu, you still have to basically long press and wait and let go. You can't just hold your finger on the screen. And then you can't do something like open the context menu, then move your finger down and to select an action and let go in one gesture. You still have to do it. You have to, like, press twice, which is slower. The lock screen controls, interestingly, still respond to force, but other stuff doesn't. So, the quick actions and the new preview menus. And the thing that annoys me the most is the rich notification previews. So, when you're on the lock screen, before, with 3D Touch, you could just, like, force press down, firmly press down on a notification banner, and it would expand, and you could see the full preview, and then even a message you can type or reply right from there. Whereas now, it works like the iPhone XR, where you press on the screen, you wait, it vibrates, then you have to let go, then it opens up the preview window, and then you can bring your fingers back down to actually do something. So
yep.
It's kind of like worse, basically, for everyone that used to have it.
Yeah, I
don't love this
change. There was an
email going around from Federighi who kind of said it was a bug. Yeah. I'm not sure that what he said was a bug is what everyone thinks is a bug, because especially things like Peek and Pop is not coming back. They've got rid of it for a reason. And the reason is, you know, you don't have to be a seer to work this one out. The iPhone 11 is not going to have 3D touch, so they're filling out the system with suitable replacements everywhere. It would be nice if the current crop of 3D touch devices could retain the same features, but at the moment, the current outlook is it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And it seems like you're going to have to be doing the let go stuff, and definitely for Peek and Pop stuff, that's gone. So it's not great if, when you're updating to iOS 13 and then like you lose some features that are not just cool, but they're like differentiation, because the 3D touch stuff was, you know, it was kind of mocked a bit because some people call it confusing or it wasn't used
hidden,
by a lot of people.
But, yeah.
You know, I've seen normal people use it. Yeah, hidden. I have seen normal people use it for stuff. It's not 100% usage, but maybe it's like 5%, but still it's significant. And that group of people are probably going to be a bit upset with how it's basically got worse for them now.
Yeah, my favorite. My favorite 3D touch action has been from the home screen with Safari. You know, press N, swipe up, and then release my finger from the new tab option, and then it opens a new tab in Safari with the cursor in the status bar, or you know, the address bar, so you can type in your Google search or a web address, and it's a new tab, not like open Safari, add new tab, and not even like press in, lift off, tap a button. Like, it was really fast, and now I can't do that. Maybe it'll come back. I hope it does, but I'm not sure now. And then even in the beta, like that new tab button just opens up the last tab you saw. Like, so it's a little bit bugged out there. I did see, like, I looked in the settings, there's accessibility and there's 3D touch as a section. That's all unchanged. Like, you still get like the flower background where you press into it and like sample out how firm you want 3D touch to be. But you can turn off 3D touch and nothing changes. Like, everything's exactly the same with, like, because it's all haptic touch now.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious if in beta 2 this improves or if it's exactly the same. Because it's a win on all the devices like iPad and I guess iPod Touch and the iPhones that didn't even have haptic touch. Like, it's a win there. But it's definitely a step back on like the iPhone 6S through 10S. Minus the SE and 10R, because it's a step backwards if you use those features. And it would be too bad if you've got to upgrade to a new phone to get a new feature in a new way. And like Tim Cook went on Stephen Colbert to like show off this new feature. Like, it was one of the big features of the 6S, and like, you know, better camera, live photos too. But like, he was excited about Peek and Pop, and you can't Peek and Pop now. Just too bad.
Yeah, and maybe, and even if they do like adapt it slightly in response to the criticism and like community backlash about it, for instance, they could bring back the behavior of being able to do the home screen quick actions in one fluid movement for 3D touch phones. The Peek and Pop stuff is definitely gone. Like, they've gone from the API structure. If you use a non-updated app, it still does it. But as soon as you update to the iOS 13 SDK on those apps, they change to this new previewing menu thing. And they want you to like stuff that screen with a load of menus, because obviously then it works across platforms. And if you port to the Mac with Catalyst, those same actions can be translated into a right-click menu on the Mac as well. So,
yeah.
And obviously, it's going to work with the iPhone 11. So yeah, that's definitely gone. Like, Peek and Pop's like fully gone. But and maybe they can make it slightly better for stuff like the home screen quick actions. But
yeah,
in general, it's going to be worse.
And the iPhone 11 theory, based on rumors, is that there is no pressure layer because it's thick. It's hard to do with OLED, I guess, and it's expensive. And it's not, I guess, beloved. And that there's a separate rumor, I think, coming from Mark Gurman at Bloomberg, that Apple's developing, we don't know if it's going to be on the iPhone 11 or not, but some sort of hover gesture where it's not even like touching the screen, it seems, but it can detect where your finger's, you know, hovering over. And so like you replace like a long press with like, I don't even press at all, but just wait. So whatever that is, that could be where they're going with this. But that's some old phones. Not even old phones. Tennis is new. We'll get mixed up in the shuffle in the transition. So, also, how you know, a few more things to go through here. How do you feel about the new share sheet in iOS 13 and how it's redesigned? Because it's a big change. Like, from iOS 6 to iOS 7, it got a theme change in a big way, and it added AirDrop. Mm-hmm. But now I think it's like the biggest change to the share sheet since like that style, even with iOS 6. How do you feel about the new situation with the share sheet?
Yeah, I like it. I thought the old share sheet was super ugly. Like, it was so much bubbliness. It was kind of just like bubbles, bubbles, bubbles. And it would prioritize airdrop so much by giving it its own dedicated row that, you know, I like airdrop, but, you know, I'm not airdropping every day. Most of the time when I'm going to the share sheet, I'm going to the messages app. Like, that is the number one route that I'm taking. I'm sharing a photo normally or a screenshot, going to messages, clicking someone's name and going from there. And the new redesigned share sheet in iOS 13 optimizes for that use case brilliantly because they've got rid of the dedicated row for airdrop and put little contact shortcuts for, you know, recent friends. So, and compared with the app that you contact them on. And this, at the moment, this is only on messages because obviously that's the Apple app, but there is actually API support for other apps to also appear in that, in that, in that list. So other, your WhatsApp contacts could also appear there eventually.
Yeah.
But it means that if I'm talking to you, for instance, I can press share and immediately press your face and I can press send and I'm done. And so it optimizes for that use case so much better. The thing I don't like about it as much is the actions, which are the not the share app icons, because basically now there's two rows. There's the friends row, which also, by the way, puts in nearby airdrop contacts if they show up. So you're not actually losing functionality anyway there, because if there is airdrop people nearby, it just puts it in the friends row. Then you have the second row, which is basically the app integrations, the share integrations. And then the third category is actions, and third-party actions appear in as well. In the iOS 7 era, they would just be a third row scrolling horizontally. Now they've changed it to like a vertical list. It's okay, but that list can get very, very, very long, and it's kind of like overbearing to your head to like have to scan through this list every single time if you're looking for one of those actions. Plus, you now always have to scroll up because they don't show the whole list on screen at one time. So basic options for like copy, right, can often be off screen. And so that's worse. But by far and away, the number one action I do with the share sheet is share through messages. They made it faster, prettier, and more efficient at doing that. So on balance, it's much better.
Yeah, I had not used the message share icon, like maybe ever, because it was tap message, type in the contact name or pick it from a list, and then send. And that was just way harder. And so what I would do the most is share sheet, hit copy, and then go to the messages app, which wasn't very bad with like fluid gestures and everything. Like, it wasn't so bad. But this new thing, like, I am using the share sheet for sending something from to messages all the time. And I love that it's got the people that I contact the most. It's got my AirDrop stuff. If my MacBook is open and I'm like, can send from my iPhone, it works great. The thing that you mentioned about like the scrollable list, that is a bit unwieldy. And maybe, can you still customize it from app to app, or is it like the same across the system? Because I'm seeing a lot of stuff that's
There is customization, and they've kind of done a little bit now where they integrate Siri suggestions into the customization options to try and, because obviously no normal person manages that by hand. They don't, you know, most people didn't even know you could edit the list or rearrange the order in the old one.
Right.
You just have to scroll all the way to the right to get to that more button. On the redesign one, they kind of use recommendations now to try and help you put the most relevant ones close, but you can still go in and edit and put your own favorite ones there and drag them around.
Yeah, I think it looks good. I think it used to be that like all the shortcut ones were like a shortcut icon and then text, and now it can be like a different icon. So that, and also because it's a list and not like, you know, icons in a row, you can have way more text there because it can be much more descriptive. So I like that. For me, copy is the very top. So like I can tap it at any time and it's really accessible. But then most of the other stuff you got to kind of scroll through, and you do kind of got to relearn like where things are in that way, and maybe spend some time customizing it if you're like me and you care. But I'm a big fan of the new share sheet, and it stands out to me that it's a bigger change than for the share sheet than iOS 6 to iOS 7 was, because they added AirDrop there, but it was before that they had two rows of like icons and then like the metal icons for the actions, you know, like where it was like this weird thing. And they just became like colored icons.
Yeah. If I could make like one suggestion about how to make the redesign share sheet like 10 times better without doing a massive redesign to it again, all I'd ask is that when it appears fully expanded rather than like filling half the screen. So that way, I've just opened a link now on Safari, and it defaults to opening halfway up. So it's basically taking up half the screen. And of the actions, I can only see copy and barely see save to files, which is half covered by the home indicator on my iPhone X. So basically, you can't click it. It would be way better if it just opened when it was scrolled upwards, because then I could immediately see like six actions immediately without having to like scroll twice. That would make it a million times better, and all they'd have to do is change like the default scroll offset, and that'd be it.
Okay. All right. Also, Face ID on the iPhone XS. So last week you mentioned, you know, that's part of iOS 13. Face ID is faster, and you mentioned that your iPhone X Face ID it feels as fast as the iPhone XR's in your family Face ID, which is literally faster. And for me, since running iOS 13 on the iPhone, I've not experienced that. I feel like unlocking my phone is faster. But I was listening to Guy Rambo on 9to5 Mac Stack Trace podcast, and he mentioned that he didn't feel like his iPhone XR test device was unlocking faster, but that he felt like unlocking apps like 1Password with Face ID is faster with iOS 13. And that's totally how I feel. So it's a good listen to hear the podcast, but also like that insight I totally agree with. Like it was thinking, oh, I do see that now. So that's awesome. And then...
Yeah, they've changed the animation. Mm-hmm. Like it used to do this thing when you're inside the app where the like disk would roll over itself a few times. And now it just goes immediately from like square Face ID to the circular check mark. And that used to be the old accessibility. And if you enabled the accessibility option, which was reduce motion, I think it would use that animation before. And now it uses that animation all the time. And that helps contribute to make it feel faster.
Yeah. On running iOS 13 on my iPad, one of the things that I used to do to have the web and then TweetDeck as my Twitter client, because it has streaming so that the tweets come in as they're tweeted, not like with a refresh, is I would put Chrome side by side with Safari so that I could have a TweetDeck over there, because you couldn't do Safari, you know, two instances of Safari. Now that you can, I don't need Chrome on my iPad anymore. I hadn't thought of this until I was running the beta, but now I can just reliably have TweetDeck as its little column over there and then expand it if I want to. But that's been really cool. Also, you know, one of the things in running, iPad OS on the iPad, is that just switching between apps can be so tricky. You know, like if you just want to, like, say you got like five apps you want to use, you can view like three at a time on screen, but like just changing, you know, the slide over app, like the one that's floating on its own to another app can be a lot of work, especially if you're like switching those frequently. That's greatly improved now that you get like the iPhone 10 style navigation, which you have like a history of apps that you can swipe through, or like an expose of apps that you can see. So that's improved in practice for me, though. It's better, but it's still tricky of like just building your work environment. Whereas like on the Mac, you can just like throw as many windows on your desktop at the same time as possible. And then like mission control, you know, swipe up and like see everything that's active and pick between them. So, an improvement there, but not like groundbreaking for me. Also I've experienced, this is also in the Safari area, that the way that tabs work on macOS Catalina is just like mind boggling. I think it's a combination of them trying to be intelligent about tabs that are already open, like an existing tabs. And I just can't work out how it's working. Like, and I would just love like an option to like just go back, do the old way where a new tab opens, to the far right. And if you have the same tab open already, you can have two of those same tabs, like I won't try and be smart about it. This is one thing that would make me like consider not using Safari if they don't change the way this works or give you an option to revert, because I will often have a lot of 9to5 Mac tabs open. I want my new tab to go to the right. And like, I lose all sense of place, with the way tabs work now. So I don't love that. I did have some experience using Sidecar in macOS Catalina. So I put the beta initially on the iMac, and then I would just get really tempted and I put it on the MacBook Air. And so I got to use, I think that context makes a lot of sense. Like, running your Mac, like a small display Mac, like maybe even portable, like a MacBook, and then having the iPad be your second screen, I found that very valuable. Like I could just put TweetDeck over there, and it's like full screen environment, even put like messages over that and then like use the MacBook Air's keyboard to type with it or use the iPad Pro smart keyboard to type with it. And there's a limitation of like, you can't do touch input from the screen with the Sidecar. But I didn't realize this. You can use the cursor, of course, because it is a second display. So I found that to be very useful. And there was even this interesting thing where because you get a touch bar in that environment, you can then customize the touch bar from the MacBook Air system preferences keyboard section, which is previously reserved for MacBook Pro. So suddenly there was some like metaphor breakdown there where the touch bar thinks that it's physical and you can touch it, or and that it's below your screen, but it was like below and to the right. And so it was really weird that, you know, with Windows, you could do left to right to get your cursor to go over. But with touch bar customization, you had to put it down below. And so I think that could be improved, but that's pretty minor. But I'm not so sold on like using an iPad size screen next to a very large display. I'm not sure that you get a lot of utility there versus like just using the iPad on its own, I guess. But for a similarly sized screen, like I think like a dream scenario, I like small screens, is like a 12-inch MacBook if it ever gets updated with an 11-inch iPad Pro. Like that's pretty compelling. Or even like 13 and 15 with a 12.9-inch iPad. You know, I think it's pretty compelling. But I found the feature to be, there's lag and latency and everything, at least in the first beta. But at least in practice, like it was pretty well done. It's impressive.
It is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also something that was rumored that they didn't get like a lot of attention last week, we had to kind of like run the betas and test it out, was this window snapping feature, right? So tell me about the window snapping update.
Yeah, so this is hidden behind the same kind of menu that activates the sidecar. So if you have a window and then you drag your mouse up to the three, you know, the traffic light buttons in the corner, hover it over the full screen icon, the green one, and you will see options to open the window in the external display, like the iPad, and then it will have options to tile to the left and tile to the right. Now, at first, I thought those were the window snapping options, because that's what it sounds like by the labels, but those just activate the old-style macOS split view thing, where it literally goes into full screen, but with two apps side by side. And obviously, we talked about this all the way in the wrap-up to WWDC. What we want is like Windows, as in Microsoft Windows-style window snapping, where you're just resizing your windows on the desktop without going into like a separate space or full-screen environment. Well, it turns out, if you hold down the Option key, the options in that menu change. And so instead of being tiling into split view, they move and take up, you know, 50% of the right-hand side of the screen, 50% of the left-hand side of the screen,
mm-hmm.
and actually are window snapping behaviors. Hallelujah. Yeah.
Super hidden, probably on a word cloud slide somewhere, but it's there. So that's nice. That's nice closure for that feature. And I'll say, after installing macOS Catalina on my MacBook Air, it only lasted about a day. I had to go backwards because I need a Mac that is not on the beta right now. It was foolish of me to try it out. My iMac experienced a beta bug this week that I've seen someone else on Twitter have as well, where it just loses all storage. Like I was down to the kilobytes of storage space, and I'd never worked out what happened, but I'm curious if it's related to like, you know, photo management or, you know, duplicating like the iTunes libraries because the apps have moved around. But I had those files on external storage. I don't know what happened, but I just left my iMac over the weekend and it self-corrected. And now I've got like 128 gigabytes free. But there was a time where I lost all storage and it was like non-functional and I couldn't control it without just turning it off. So so that if that's not a warning to stay away from the betas, you know, there you go. and So now I'm back on macOS Mojave on my MacBook Air, but and we'll see. Like with the betas, we expect there to be new betas probably on Tuesday of next week for beta 2.
Yeah.
But even then, you know, they could be rocky. There was one year where it took 3 weeks. Usually it's 15 days, but there's one week where it took like 22 days for the next beta version, and that was one of the bigger releases. So it could be 3 weeks out, and even then, they say public beta in July. Which, if that's, you know, 2 weeks out from 2 weeks away from keynote, 2 weeks away from the second beta, then that could be like early July, but then that would be beta 3. So again, you know, you can get like serious like FOMO, like fear of missing out from not running these betas over the summer. I do find utility in like finding things to discuss for, you know, stories and the podcast. But if it's just for like pure, you just want to like use the features now and not later, there can be some serious consequences. So, I also want to discuss, some watchOS stuff before we wrap up. I had an experience with noise alerts that, you know, how the watch now has a sound app that can let you know, like, what are the decibels of the room right now? And also passively, it can just detect sound in the background and alert you if it's over like 90 decibels. That's too high for, you know, your hearing over extended periods of time. I turned that detection feature off. You can still use the sound app like manually, but, I was getting, one thing is like sphere of battery life. Like I feel like that's a new process running. It can take battery life on a beta. You want to have as much battery as possible. So that's one reason to turn it off for me. But I went swimming in a pool and I used the watch, you know, it's swim proof. So I used the watch in the pool and I had two alerts that I think were for probably just from like swimming and like that sound on the wrist is very loud because like it's my hand going underwater and back out again, but that at my ear level, it wasn't. So, I think there could probably be some intelligence about that. Like, you know, if I wasn't like logging a swim, but yeah.
Yeah. I saw some like anecdote where somebody said they had the window down in their car and they were like driving and their arm was resting on the steering wheel, and it was so obviously like the wind was like whistling past the watch, and he said it didn't sound particularly loud to his ear, but the watch was like pinging off crazy, saying now noise warning, and it was like getting confused of like the wind making really loud whooshing noise. It like went past his wrist, but it didn't seem like the actual environment was noisy. So there's a few issues like that around.
Yeah. And aside from that, there's other new sleep stuff or not sleep stuff, but hearing stuff in here. I have seen in the health app where it says your headphones haven't been at an unhealthy level over the last 7 days or so. So that's pretty cool to see. And that was stuff that was rumored. So now we can actually see it in the beta version. So it's nice. We discussed the chime for the hour last week that involved birds. I told you I was curious about that feature, that I used to do a version of that on the Mac during work hours to just keep me through the day and give me an update so I wouldn't like waste too much time on one thing or another. I've turned it on and I've used the 30-minute option. And I don't think the birds are not in beta 1 yet. It's a way more pleasant chime that I could totally live with if they don't revert to the birds from the keynote. I feel like beta 2, they'll probably have the birds ready and it'll be there. But I hope this like more pleasant chime is an option for the sound, because I've really enjoyed it. Like if you're muted, it's just a tap with no alert on it, which is weird. But if you have your sound on like I do, and it's not a problem to be like noisy, I guess, where you are, I've liked the 30-minute chime like every half hour. Because if I'm like writing a story, it's like, oh, it's, yeah, you know, look at the time there. You know, I've spent that much on this, or I've goofed off for this amount of time. So just in terms of like keeping me on track throughout the day, I found it to be really nice. But I am afraid of like once the bird sounds from the keynote comes, that it'll be just annoying. I thought that just a tap alone would be encouraging, but I do like this chime that they're using too. And I'm not sure that a tap on its own would be good. But I'm afraid of the birds coming. So we'll see how that goes. Of the new watch faces, I have greatly enjoyed the solar dial face. And that's because you can have the four corner complications like the infograph face, the infograph analog face. But you can make the clock not analog. You can make it digital. And it feels like an analog face. And I've got a thing where I don't like using digital faces with like Melanie's Loop or like a leather strap, like when it feels like a watch band, not like a sport band. I don't like having a digital face. It just doesn't feel like it matches well for me. But that's it looks like an analog face, but you can put a digital clock as the clock, not like as another clock on the face. And it feels like, you know, it shows the sun throughout the day, like where it's positioned, and it changes in that way. So I like the way it looks. I also like the California face when you just have numbers, like standard numbers on the clock, and the black collar. And that feels like the modern version of the classic utility face, where it's like you've got a face with numbers and a second hand and complications, like if they updated utility for the Series 4, but didn't do the silly, like, curve the complications in a weird way. So I've loved that. Like some of these faces that use these complications on the corner, like Solar Dial in California, do you know if those are on Series 3 as well? Like, I don't know if it would fit in that box.
I don't know.
Yeah. Actually. I've got access to a Series 3 38 millimeters. I'm going to try installing it on the beta on that just to see, because I'm curious. If it shows up, like, I feel like it would be really compromised because it's as big as the Infograph face. You just don't have sub-dial complications, and you don't get those faces on Series 3. So, because I don't think they fit well. So I'll test back and report that. We always need a mystery to see. And then the last thing I got for this week before we go away is, I'm sure it was mentioned elsewhere before last week, but, there is now a cellular complication, which, they've had cellular bars on the Explorer face only, or in Control Center when you swipe up, but not as a complication for any face. And the way it works is, if you're not using cellular on Explorer, there's no complication. If you are, it shows up, and it's like sub-dial, so it's like not using a slot. The way that the complication works is, it's the cellular logo, and I guess you can tap it and like turn cellular on or off easily that way. But it's only the logo unless you're using cellular, and then you get the four dots. So it's kind of a compromise situation there, where it's not as practical as on an Explorer face, but it can be on more faces because of how that works. So it's there. And if you often go between cellular and not on cellular, it's useful. Or if you toggle it on and off to save battery for some reason, you know, maybe that's practical. But I couldn't sacrifice a whole complication slot to that for that purpose. But it's there as an option now.
Last episode, I kind of panned the solar dial face as being horrific and horrible. You obviously told me that you'd switch to it a bit, but on the digital version.
Yeah.
And I will say, the digital version is a lot less offensive than the analog version. The analog one's like, I don't know what they were thinking. The digital one is kind of classy, especially with like the seconds ticking around the little circle, which is the same kind of style they have on the modular digital face as well. And also, the California face is really funny that it has a really niche name, and the default layout is, you know, super niche with the, you know, mix of Roman numerals and the actual numbers, which is obviously where it gets its name California from. It's the California from the watch industry. But if you tweak that with, you know, the non-default options, you can get like a really nice mainstream regular face. It's almost like a shame they've named it so, like, to almost deprecate its like importance. I feel like it'd almost be the new default face for lots and lots of people because it is that good. It's just weird that it, you know, ships with a strange name and a weird default layout that's, you know, will turn some people off. Because realistically, a lot of people don't even, you know, edit that stuff. They just go with whatever the watch presents to them. So some people won't even realize that you can customize it to make it, you know, humane. But if you do customize it, it's a really, really nice face.
Yeah, I did a post when the Series 4 came out about the Infograph face, like not modular, but just the analog face that was the default, the one that leaked. And the whole purpose of the post was, A, you can get a lot of different looks from that face, and the default is like complication overload, but you can slim it down to just complications without subdial or no complications at all and get a way different looking watch face. So I think a lot of people did the same thing for California face, because you're right, like the default is a little bit questionable, you know, it's from the watch world, but it's not like, you know, Apple Watch friendly. You know, it's pretty opinionated, but you can get a pretty, you know, not like generic, but like universally accepted watch face out of it that looks really good. So I'll probably do that story this week or next week. So good idea. All right, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach, and Mayo, you're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
All right. And also follow 9to5 Mac on Twitter and Instagram at 9to5 Mac. If you have any feedback for the show, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.